Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll. And Eric Andre, actor, comedian, and host of the Eric Andre Show on Adult Swim, makes his Talk is Jericho debut. He's also adding author to his list of accomplishments. Eric and his longtime collaborator Dan Curry have a new book called Dumb Ideas. It's all about the art of pranking, and they share some great behind-the-scenes stories about some of their most classic pranks. Eric tells you some of those stories coming up on the show as well. The book also has tips if you want to be a good prankster. Got some suggestions for pranks you can try at home. And you can get Dumb Ideas wherever you get books. You can get Eric Andre on tour as well. The Andre Explosion Tour is going on through December 16th. EricAndreTour.com is all the dates and ticket information. And I was on the Eric Andre Show, as you're about to hear, if you remember that. Eric and I tell the story about my prank and why it was edited the way it was. It was about 10 seconds long. Eric also explains what happened when actor John Hamm was on the show, how Dennis Rodman and Vivica A. Fox reacted to the pranks. He shares who actually walked off in the set in the middle of shooting, and how LeVar Burton was able to be on the show without getting pranked. Eric's a big LeVar Burton fan. Eric was also on the most recent season of The Righteous Gemstones. Talks about working with Danny McBride and his crew. It's a great conversation with Eric Andre, and it starts right here, right now, on Talk is Jericho.
Where are you?
In Madison, Wisconsin, here with Eric Andre, and I just found out that I'm on Central Time, so I was tardy. I was tardy for you, man, and I don't like doing that, so my apologies.
Are you wrestling out there, or are you living out there?
No. We got a Fozzy tour right now, so we're on tour with the band.
The band's touring. Nice. I love Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah, exactly. So I haven't seen you in a while, man. Obviously, very, very cool to reconnect you. Every year on your birthday, you send me an invitation to come wrestle in your backyard.
Still holding you to it, man. Still looking for you.
I'm like, I don't really do birthday parties anymore, but for you, I'd consider it.
Why? You don't got a drink. We got non-alcoholic stuff.
The last time I wrestled a kid's birthday party, probably when I was about 20 years old, and I got paid a hot dog and a glass of orange juice. So can you beat that?
I can't. I don't have that kind of budget. Well, you don't have to wrestle. You can just come hang out. We can arm wrestle.
I think that'd be even more fun to do that, man. Absolutely. Lots of stuff to talk about today, but let's go into the time when I did your show, the Eric Andre Show. What an amazing, ridiculously fun experience it was. And I don't know if you remember, we did the bit and you cut it down to about 3 seconds. It was very, very quick. Do you remember this?
I'm sorry. I think you just like fall into a hole or something. You know, the most common complaint I get from guests after an interview is, why did you torture me for so long and you only aired like 60 seconds of it? And it's because it's a quarter hour show and we have to just shave everything down. But yours is particularly stumpy. I wish we could go back into that footage and release like a extended dance remix. But it might have been like we were coming down to the wire and Adult Swim was like, you have to get that episode down to 11 minutes, 15 seconds. And you might have just like had some sacrificial lamb stuff going on, but you were great. I'm such a massive fan. Like I grew up on you. So it was like very intimidating interviewing you because you're like mythological to me. you know, I just grew up watching you wrestle. You're just such an amazing, talented performer. I think I was a bit nervous during that thing. Because, like, you know, wrestling is one of my biggest influences for my show. But I'm sorry that your interview got cut to 3 seconds. I don't think it was 3 seconds, but it was stumpy on the timeline.
My son just discovered the show.
How old is he?
He's 19 now.
Wow.
Yeah, so he was asking me, like, did you even understand what you were getting yourself into with that show? And it's funny because you mentioned that you said that you were kind of nervous or whatever, but you weren't nervous because you actually took off your suit and sat on my lap completely naked.
You know what? That's my way of expressing nervousness.
And I think Hannibal made like pina coladas and poured it. I think he poured it over my head.
Oh, God.
So you mentioned before, though, that wrestling kind of influenced your show.
Wrestling is like a major influence. I grew up watching WCW and WWF when it was WWF and ECW, Terry Funk. You can't even show blood on WWE now. But I remember, like, the wrestling we grew up watching, like, dudes would, like, eat glass. Roddy Piper would smash beer bottles over his head,
right,
face, and, like, do a promo while bleeding down his face. It was crazy.
Yeah.
It wasn't just wrestling. It was, like, performance art, man. It was fucking, like, crazy. And, like, you hear, like, podcasts that were like Iron Sheik would do crazy drugs with Hacksaw Jim Duggan. They would do like, they would speedball, like they would do like heroin and cocaine,
right,
and like 80 steroids and trucker speed before matches. It was hardcore. Like any like rock star, Motley Crue, whatever, like documentary you hear about, you're like, dude, if they followed Hacksaw Jim Duggan around with a camera for 24 hours in like 1983, you would have been like, what that put in his body. So wrestling for me, I was a big, you know, I had WWF bedroom sheets since I was 3 years
right,
old
right.
With Junkyard Dog on them. Junkyard Dog, Macho Man, and Hogan on them. And like, I could see why Andy Kaufman flocked to it. It's like,
sure.
It's not just athleticism and what you have to put your body through. It's also the craziest platform for performance art. And I read this book on screenplay writing, and it said wrestling is the longest running soap opera in history.
True.
So it's just such a major influence on my life and my comedy. It like shaped my worldview because it's, everyone can understand it. It's tickling every part of your brain. It's primal. It's intellectual. Like you see wrestling fans, they're all walks of life. It really unites the world more than any other like sport. Like you can't get Americans into soccer. You can get the world into wrestling, you know? So I don't know. It just spoke to me at such a young age. And I just grew up on your work so much. So I was like, so pumped to have you on the show. I'm sorry, we whittled it down. It might have been one of those things where we had a deadline and like, there's just like things in episode. There's tons of stuff that I should go back and air that I like regret cutting, or we just had to cut because your back's against the wall when you have those editing deadlines and you just have to get the thing down to an 11 minute runtime or you're fucked.
You would use kind of the flying by the seat of your pants type of attitude from wrestling for your show, for the Eric Andre show. It just kind of, there was no rules. There was no limits. Kind of, that was the idea that you had.
Yeah. Well, I loved how emotionally volatile wrestlers were. Ultimate Warrior. And also the promos. The promos were like more influential on my life sometimes than the actual matches. You know, Macho Man promos, I would have them like memorized when I was a kid. He was like the master of Who were your influences growing up with wrestling? What generation of wrestlers did you?
The same ones, you know, the that kind of late 80s resurgence, Hulkamania time with like you mentioned, Macho Man and Ultimate Warrior and those types of guys, Bobby Heenan and
yeah.
You know, Hogan himself, actually. So, because I was the same as you. The matches were great, but I was always attracted to the characters and the storylines and the fact you could be a complete individual. You know, it wasn't a team sport or anything like that.
It's a lot like stand-up.
Right.
Were you a Ric Flair fan?
We didn't get a lot of Flair up because I grew up in Canada, so we didn't have a lot of Flair. But obviously, I'm a Flair fan now.
Were you? Did you not get WCW up in Canada?
No, it was called NWA back then, so we didn't get that at the time.
But you got WWF.
Yeah, of course, right. And AWA prior to that, which was from Minneapolis, which is where Hogan started, and a lot of the guys started in that area as well.
Did you ever see any ECW growing? No, you didn't get ECW.
I was in ECW. That's the thing. So we didn't really get it, but it was on satellite. You know what I mean? So you could access it that way.
Oh, you started at ECW?
Yeah. I mean, I'd been wrestling for a few years prior to that, but I was there in about 95 or so. So I understand kind of what you're saying about how the attitude and kind of the, like I said, the inanity of pro wrestling would influence your show because the Eric Andre Show definitely had that same vibe to it.
I love that everyone was terrified of Andre the Giant. I just watched this documentary.
Yeah.
You don't think of wrestlers being terrified of anybody because they're just like, they're machines. So to hear that like Macho Man and Hulk Hogan was like going to like the locker room or whatever, and he'd just be like smoking and playing poker. And he'd like, did he say something like, you're going to win the match today? And he's like, well, what do you mean? And like, didn't say anything. Like, wrestling docs, too, I was obsessed with.
At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter your search based on the qualities that are most important to you. Then you can book a free 15-minute consultation call with any therapist you're interested in seeing, so you can get a feel for whether they're the right fit before you commit to a full-length session. Alma also makes it easy for mental health care providers to navigate insurance. That's why 95% of therapists in their directory accept insurance for sessions, so you can find care that's affordable without stressing about the paperwork. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit HelloAlma.com/therapy60 to schedule a free consultation today. That's HelloAlma.com/therapy60.
Let's talk about the Eric Andre Show, though. I want to find out, like, how did you pitch this show originally for Adult Swim? What was kind of your idea for it?
Sorry, I'm hijacking. I'm nerding out about it.
Andre is Jericho here.
You know, I was doing stand-up. I went to a jazz college in Boston, and I was realizing as I was finishing jazz school that I'd made a terrible mistake as far as, like, figuring out what to do career-wise.
Right.
So as I was finishing jazz college, I was started doing stand-up in Boston, around Boston. I loved it, and I felt like there's merit to pursuing it more than jazz, which is like getting a degree in Sanskrit. Really. So jazz is like learning a dead language. It's like it's a degree in Latin. So
yeah.
Then I moved to New York, and I was doing chicken shit open mics everywhere and working a day job. And I just had this idea for this wild, insane talk show that was just the mixed salad of my influences. All the, in high school and into college, it was Tom Green Show and Jackass and Ali G Show, but also Wonder Shows and Ren Stimpy and Beavis and Butthead and Chappelle Show. And I love Naked Gun and Airplane. So I just kind of like, they just all merged in my mind. And I knew this NBC executive, and I pitched her my idea, and she was like, it seems so specific, and you have such a specific vision for it, but it seems like something that couldn't be sold with a script. It seems like it has to jump off the page, and you have an idea for the vision of it. So I was like, I have to film a little. So I scrounged up whatever money I had, which was like nothing, and I knew I had to film it myself, and it took me forever, and I had to like beg people to borrow equipment and borrow spaces and spend whatever money I had on dumb costumes and fluffer and under sandwiches for a crew of two people. And then I bought Final Cut for Dummies, and I had to download like a editing software, like a cracked version of editing software. And I taught myself like to edit. It took me like a year to edit like a 7-minute thing.
Right.
But I, around 2010, I got that into the hands of the president of Adult Swim. He loved it. Mm. And they had a talk show since Space Ghost. And he was like, let's make a pilot. We made a pilot. The next year, 2011, then 2012, they picked it up. Yeah, so we're on our 11th year of the show, the sixth season. It came out of, it was also terrifying. I hadn't shot any pranks before. I remember we did this prank where we crashed like a colonial Civil War reenactment. Me and my friend Jermaine, we dressed like slaves. And we crashed a Civil War reenactment. And ran around with our white friend, Sean, chasing us with a whip, like, get back here. And we shot it all hidden camera. We had no permission to be there. And my friend Jermaine and Sean, they didn't know it was, they thought I was asking to shoot a sketch. And we were like driving deep into like Pennsylvania or something. And they're like, where are we going to shoot this sketch? I was like, we're crashing a real Civil War reenactment. They're like, oh, this isn't like a scripted thing. I go, no, these are real people. And they all started shitting water. You know, so it was terrifying. And I was like, okay, if I say mustard, that means the police are coming. If I say ketchup, that means the ambulance is coming, and I got hurt. Somebody attacked me. And my friends are like, wait, what is going on? But that was the salad days. And that's where it started.
The idea, though, was like when people would come on your show, you wouldn't fill them in that you were going to be doing a lot of these crazy things. A lot of people had no idea what they were getting themselves into.
They still don't. I don't tell anybody anything.
Right.
If they watch the show, we try to not even tell their publicist the name of the show. We try to say, like, it's a very popular show, and we'll drop some names. We'll be like, Chris Rock and Jimmy Kimmel and Seth Rogen have been on it. So they go, okay, that seems legit.
Yeah.
And then when people are on a publicity tour, they get roped into things. I get roped into, not roped into, but like I blindly say yes to a lot of stuff that I do for.
Yeah, you don't know. You just see all the, it's a television hit, so television's good. Let's do it.
Yeah, yeah. So we do people into the studio and just hope that they don't recognize me, but I'm meeting people for the first time on camera, and I'm sending them to the moon.
So what were some of the best moments of people not understanding what was going on for you?
Oh man, we've had some walkouts and some the best are these people that slink out. Like, we had Tashina Arnold, she's from the show Martin Cheat. She was on, and we had a bunch of African hissing cockroaches come out of my coffee mug on the desk. Man, she was stressed. And then she started running away, and we had this long feather on a stick, and we would tickle the back of her ankles as she was running away, like from behind. So, like, she really didn't like that. And we had the rapper T.I. He kind of walked out because we had a lot of male nudity, full frontal male nudity.
Right.
And when dicks are flying around, the rappers get a little uncomfortable.
Oh, those rappers.
Yeah.
Always scared of dicks.
Yeah. They have a sausage phobia.
No, I mean, it was crazy because I remember even just because we did film quite a bit, just the stuff you would start doing at the desk of just like, you'd start having like a shake, like stuff like that. Or you take a chainsaw and just start sawing the desk. And it's like, whatever crossed your mind to do, you would just do it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, hoping for people to just flip out and react. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people had no idea what the fuck it was that you were doing when they were on the show.
Yeah, you were hard to paint because you've been through ECW, which is like the wild. That was probably like another day at the office.
Yeah, and I knew because I did my research on it, and I knew what you were doing. So I was playing along with it, which I think was probably another reason why it was such a short little bit. Because,
oh yeah, when people play along, my editors,
yeah,
we have a term for it. We call it wrong side of the couch. So we wait, and I'll wear a person down until they're really, really just can't take it anymore. Like, we had John Hamm on, and he started out by trying to play along. And then I started going down the train of being like, now you were in Baby Driver with Kevin Spacey. And he's like, yeah, like, where's this going? And I was like, and you supported all the things that he did to young boys. He's like, I did not do that at all. And I'm like, well, the jury's out on that. And he's like, no, the jury's in. And then I started seeing the beads of sweat form on his head. Now we're getting somewhere. But we just snipped all this stuff out that he's like playing along. And then when he started, when that little furrowed flop sweat started forming, then I'm like, all right, now I'm in business. So yeah, you might have been like unflappable. I can't quite remember, but like you might have been like an unflappable. Raymond Cruz was like that from Tuco from Breaking Bad. He was very, he's from East LA, like Boyle Heights. So he's very hard to face. Like you've seen people like shot in front of him in his childhood. So he was just like, ah, okay, you're trying to sit on my dick or whatever the fuck I was trying to go for. He was, I think I tried to interview his penis, but you know who really didn't care for my shenanigans? Steve Shripa from the Sopranos was on, and he was trying to sell his marinara sauce. He was making a marinara sauce, and the naked PA came out and undid the jar lid and dipped his testicles in the marinara sauce. And Steve Shripa goes, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't really think it's respectful what that guy just did with my sauce. And I went, some people are going to use your sauce for that particular reason. And he's like, that's not true. And I go, how do you know? There's a whole market that you could be tapping into that you can't leave, you know, don't leave money on the table. He was very upset. But, you know, I'm just trying to tap into the little fucker I was in middle school, you know.
Right.
The, like, things I would do in the lunchroom to make my friends laugh.
You don't care. You have to have no filter, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just your id. You have to tap into your id. That's why I like love Howard Stern so much. He had such a a great ability to tap into his id. But it's like it's all in fun, you know.
You mentioned that some guests were unflappable. Did anybody ever get to you?
Yeah, Flava Flav and Dennis Rodman are so crazy that when I interviewed them, they weren't phased. I think at like one point I rested my balls on Dennis Rodman's shoulder and he was like, woo, we're having a party. He was like, yeah. They were just like, yeah. Like you can tell they've been drunk since 1991. And they were like, yeah, woo. Like they've seen it all. They've can see it all. So they're just like, oh, I'm at the party I was just at for the past 30 years.
You mentioned before earlier having those hissing cockroaches. What were some of the best pranks that you ever played on the show?
Gosh, they're all my children. It's hard to say.
All right. Yeah, good call.
When you have pestilence seeping out of the desk, that is like snakes and roaches and just explosions. We had a record number of emergency vehicles called on us this season. We had the number. It was like 32 cops, 12 fire trucks. we're not doing that, but design. We're just trying to always up the ante. I remember there's a prank where we had one actor playing this cop that was all like unconscious and bloody on the side. And I was like, I told the guy I was pranking, I was like, help me melt this cop back to health. And I reached into the cop's pants and started like jerking them off. We're in Newark, New Jersey, and like 55 cops showed up. And I was like, I'm just joking. I'm sorry.
That's kind of what you did with your book, Dumb Ideas, is kind of writing about the art of the prank. Am I correct with that?
Yeah, in the middle of quarantine, me and my writing partner were like, I've been delaying writing a book. They're like, this book literary agent reached out to me. He's like, you gotta write a book. You know, quarantine, all you can do is animation, podcast, and writing. So I was like, I think it's time. And I leaned on my writing partner, Dan Curry, to like help me. I was like, let's just send each other funny pranks every day and funny essays. And let's just try to crack each other up every morning. And we just did that until we had more than enough to fill a book. And then we started whittling down. But yeah, it's like not just behind the scenes stories about Eric Andre show pranks and the movie we did, Bad Trip, but it's also like just pranks we grew up doing in high school and stuff to our friends.
What were some of them that they have? Because there's a little bit of a list here. Like, for example, the Jell-O surprise.
Wait, the Jell-O surprise. Is that one of the ones like you can do at home? We were trying to write it like one of those old Penn and Teller books where they teach you how to do magic tricks that can like piss off your parents.
Yeah.
I grew up on that book. So it started out, our book started out that way. We just started like writing pranks you can do at home. But we realized that like, that's not enough material to fill whatever our word count requirement was. But wait, which one is Jell-O surprise? I don't have them memorized, I'll tell you that.
I don't know. It says Jell-O surprise, Benadryl stakes, amateur grave robber, and the Jim Morrison.
Benadryl steaks, I remember, like, it's a way to prank a dog. It's like if your neighbor's dog won't shut the fuck up. I had a neighbor's dog that would, like, bark incessantly all through the night, every night. It was like a nightmare. So me and the other neighbors started putting Benadryls in the steak. Well, I didn't do this, but my neighbor's dog was like, I'm going to put Benadryls in like, a nice porterhouse steak and chuck it over the fence so the dog eats it and goes to sleep.
So you got those types of things in there as well.
Yeah,
but it would seem like that's kind of the whole concept behind the Eric Andre Show, was just what kind of pranks can you play to crack people? I mean, it was a prank show essentially, right?
Yeah, it's a prank show. So it's like, yeah, it's like, how do you, because celebrities ooze confidence, right? You want to see, okay, how can I put this person that I normally see on TV being this like alpha type?
Right.
How do I get them out of their comfort zone? Which is the complete opposite of what an actual talk show would do. An actual talk show would, you'd want to get the guests comfortable. You'd want, as a host, to do your research and know about the guest's background and what the guest is promoting. But I want to be like completely dysfunctional as a talk show host. So I want to make the guests uncomfortable. I want to know nothing about them, know nothing about, not help them at all with what they're promoting, and just put them in this jigsaw circle of hell until they have a breakdown. I also like cope with anxiety. So it's like creating this like anxiety nightmare world that's like a manifestation of my own anxiety.
Was there anybody you ever had on that you were nervous to have on? Like, you mentioned me, whatever.
You.
Besides me, was there other influences, like people that you had a lot of respect for that came on, you felt bad about pranking?
Yeah, well, the only one that was willing to come on the show that I couldn't bring myself to prank was LeVar Burton from Reading Rainbow.
Oh, wow.
And I had him help me prank another guest and come out during an interview. I called my editor, Luke Lynch, and I was like, LeVar Burton is coming on the show, but I grew up on Reading Rainbow. I watched Reading Rainbow since it's one of the first television shows I was like, felt a connection with. I was like, I can't, it's like pranking Santa Claus. I was like, I can't feel good about making LeVar Burton uncomfortable. And I've never had that feeling before. I usually go into the show like a cold-blooded assassin. But yeah, I don't know. It's kind of crazy.
It's funny that it's LeVar Burton from Reading Rainbow and not from like Star Trek or from like Roots. It's the Reading Rainbow that really got you.
Yeah, it is. Star Trek and Roots as well, for sure. But like Reading Rainbow, it's like I couldn't prank my kindergarten teacher.
Too nice to you or something?
Yeah, it just feels like evil about that, in a way that when I'm pranking somebody, I don't feel like I'm like malicious. But I feel like a little kid getting a rise out of their big brother or their big sister. It feels like it's coming from brotherly love.
Uh-huh.
LeVar Burton is like my godfather.
That's great. That's very random. Has there ever been any time when you mentioned the police coming for you? Did you ever get arrested for any prank that you've ever done?
Yeah, I've been arrested a couple times. I did this prank where there was a town hall meeting in a city called Rancho Cucamonga, California. And the gentry, the residents of the town, they were complaining about like parking or loading zones or some like municipal issue. And the mayor was there and all the city council people were there. And I was dressed as like a frat boy with like Greek letters on my shirt. And I ran up to the podium as the mayor was talking. And I was like, what's up, y'all? Vote for me for class president, and I'm going to put beer in the water fountains, baby. Woo! Go Bobcats, USA. I was just trying to do like a Belushi Animal House kind of character. And I started chugging a can of Sprite, but I covered it so it looked like a Heineken.
Yeah.
And I started chugging it. And the sheriff, there was like 20 sheriffs there. So they were like, what? So they just like walked up. They wanted to squirt me out. And I was like, don't tase me, bro. But that was a thing. And then they took me to jail. They took me to jail. The sheriff was like, dude, you pranked my boss. The mayor's my boss. I have to
yeah,
charge you for it was disturbing the peace. Oh, I also told the sheriff my name was John Coltrane. So he started looking up at his like cop car computer, John Coltrane, and he was like, "You're not coming up in the system, Coltrane." And so that was another charge. It was like disturbing the peace and
false identity or something.
False identity, yeah. It was something weirdly techy. It was like corrupting an investigation or something like that.
So when you're doing these pranks, are you filming them? Or are you just doing them for the hell
yeah.
of it? Okay.
No, I filmed. That was for season one of the Eric Andre Show. We didn't know how to produce pranks yet. So we
gotcha.
Didn't know what you can do, what you can't do, what's legal, what's illegal. We were flying by the seat of our pants.
Have you ever been hurt from a prank?
Yeah, I put my hand through a glass window one time and sliced up my fingers. I didn't know when I started doing stunts that stunt performers wear pads and crash into padding. So I would just like run, launch off the desk, fly through a shelf and land on the concrete of the studio floor and just like rock myself. I remember like interviewing Vivica Fox. I jumped up on my desk ass first with both legs in the air and came down on my tailbone, and it sent this like shockwave up my spine. And the rest of like the year, I was walking around like a hunchback in Notre Dame. Like my spine like seized up. It was like scoliosis shaped to like Elephant Man. And so I was like, and it didn't unseize for like a long time. I should have gone to the doctor. I should have gone to the doctor. Yeah, have you hurt yourself wrestling? You must have destroyed yourself, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a little bit more controlled. Like you said, we do know how to, you know, fall in the right places to minimize the pain. I did fall on a ladder once and bruise my Cossacks, which is right at the end of the tailbone. So it's this little part of the tailbone that's at the end of the actual tailbone.
During a match or while you were practicing?
Yeah, during a match. I went to the doctor and he said, "You have a bruised Cossack's bone." I'm like, "What can I do?" He goes, "What do you want me to do? Put a cast on it?" Like, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
You know, nothing. You just got to
stay. Tony Hawk broke his pelvis and he's like, "There's nothing you can do."
Yeah.
You just have to be in misery for a year.
Yeah, just deal with it. Sit on a donut type of thing. I was remembering too, as we're talking, like you mentioned jumping up on your desk. I remember even your studio was such like a scummy little, shitty little studio too. Like we're just walking so up gross. Like, this is so gross. Exactly. The carpet was all worn. It just, that was another great part of the whole situation too.
We had a big chunk of carpet one time. We sprayed all this fake blood all over for a sketch. The fake blood, I think, had sugar in it or something. So we rolled up the carpet, we threw it out, started smelling. Rolled up the carpet, we threw it out in the dumpster. The next week, we were like, we were always running out of money. So we're like, we need that carpet back. And my art department dude, Nick, went to go grab it and he unfurled the carpet and it was like Joe's apartment, like millions of cockroaches. Oh. And I was like, infestation. It's like a cockroach colony and emerged. Wait, so you bruised your Cossack. What did you do? Were you done with the match at that point, or did you have to continue wrestling?
I had to continue because it was a ladder match, so I kind of fell on it. But and you know how that is too. I'm sure it's the same when you're filming. You've got adrenaline.
You know,
you're on camera. It's live. I mean, soon as it was done, the next morning it was like, you know, get me a pair of crutches so I can walk. It was pretty bad.
God. I mean, one time, this was recent. I'm doing it like a live version of my show. I jumped off stage. I just turned 40 in April. So it was a very, this is 40 moment. I jumped off stage. The crowd parted.
Oh, no.
Which I thought they were going to catch me.
Yeah.
They're like, "I'm not fucking catching you, old man." They parted and I went right down on my shoulder blade, right on the concrete floor. Boom. And then same thing. My like shoulder blade like seized up. And it was like the first 10 seconds of the show. The rest of the show, I had to like walk around like a chicken wing. And like, and then as soon as I was done and the adrenaline wore off, like an hour later after I got off stage, I thought I broke a rib. It was like, it hurt to breathe. It hurt to laugh. It hurt when I coughed or sneezed. It sucked.
Well, and what you're saying, this is the explosion tour that you're doing. It's kind of, so you do a live version of the Eric Andre Show. Like what exactly do you do? Is it stand up?
I destroy the whole stage. I interview people. I bring people out of the crowd and interview them. I get like a big jolly boy up on stage and I hook him up to this Janet Jackson sex swing thing. And I like tweak his nips and I like jerk him off into the crowd. It's like a Gwar concert. And I'll find like the local celebrity in each town and interview them on stage, whether it's like a rapper or like a weatherman, whatever. We show videos, it's just a mess. I make people, like we have this guy in Grand Rapids. I made him, he's that guy on TikTok. He has like a huge ass. He's a skateboarder. He's got, his name is Frankie. And I made him chug like 4 Red Bulls, 4 beers, 4 coffees, and like something else. Oh, hot sauce, all back to back, all in one go. And he started like vomiting on stage. And I made him crowd surf. Yeah, it's just a bunch of nonsense.
It seems like it's a lot of improv. You seem pretty fearless.
It's actually like the TV show where it's like very controlled chaos. It's like I have a ton of bits written and ready to go, but we improv within
the
thing, you know. So it's like Carrot Top meets Gallagher meets Gigi Allen, I think is the comp for the show.
Gigi Allen. what an influence he was for sure, right?
Yeah, he had a bit of a Terry Funk.
Yeah, no kidding, yeah, totally.
Mark Wire match kind of thing.
Yeah, he had that mentality for sure as well, didn't he?
Yeah. Like I was a human monster. He's an absolute. He would shit on stage and like throw his poop, eat it, and like throw his poop at you, and like break bottles over his face and stuff. What a nightmare sociopath.
I remember somebody had a documentary of him or some kind of home movie.
Todd Phillips.
Wow, he did that.
Todd Phillips dropped out of NYU film school when he was like 19 years old to follow Gigi Allen around for a year with a camera.
Wow.
That was his first magnum opus. Yeah, that's how he started. And now he's like a multimillionaire from 3 Hangover movies and then everything else. But that was his start. It's pretty crazy. You could tell 19-year-old Todd Phillips was like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
What does he do?
Right.
Where is he? He's also in the East Village. He's also in downtown New York. Steve, grab as many cameras as NYU will let me borrow and just follow this maniac around for you.
We did a show in Savannah. For some reason, it was Fozzie, which is my band, and the Murder Junkies.
Oh, boy.
Which was Gigi Allen's band, but Gigi's not with us anymore. It was brother Merle. And it was the worst kind of booking ever, like these two bands together. I remember we played in front of like punks who weren't having our heavy metal madness in the least.
Oh, no. Still. Yeah, man. Oh, these guys are gnarly. Top gnarliness.
So another cool thing that I was just got into Righteous Gemstones and season 3, I believe it is. That's pretty much you're in every episode. And it was awesome to see you with your parted hair, which was amazing. How was it for you acting? Because obviously you're so off the cuff and crazy. This character is a little bit more, you know, there's more rules when you're actually doing acting and playing that part.
It's great. Are you kidding me? Yeah. No one's going to arrest me. I'm not worried about getting arrested. I'm not worried about getting attacked. I'm not worried about chipping the end of my tailbone off.
Right.
You know, making pranks is so much more stressful than any other medium that whenever I do like a scripted show, I'm like, wow, this is a breeze. And also like any other show I've ever done has way more money than the Eric Andre shows. So I'm like, wow, I can have all the sun chips I want. Hell yeah. And also Danny McBride and all the Roughhouse guys, the people that make Righteous Gemstones and Eastbound and Down and Vice Principals, they're like so awesome and sweet. And we were shot in Charleston, South Carolina, which is such a fun town, amazing restaurants. I just had such a blast with those guys. I'll work with them forever and ever till the ends of the world. They're just like so down to earth, so collaborative. No egos, no dickheads. The cast is awesome. It's like no dickheads allowed.
Right.
And there's so many unwell people in showbiz. So it's such a nurturing, non-toxic environment. It was like a thrill. And when you're just acting and you don't have the stress of producing or writing on top of performing.
Right.
It is so relaxing. Like, you know, I would rehearse my scenes with my acting coach or my assistant or somebody else in the cast or a friend. And then once I got the scene in my bones and I felt like I rehearsed it to the point where I don't want it to be rigid anymore, I was like, wait, I have the rest of the day. I don't think being back-to-back meetings till 1 a.m. I was like, this is awesome. I'm going to go eat. I didn't know what to do with that much time.
Right.
Eric Andre showed there's no downtime. You're either filming or you're in 9,000 back-to-back meetings prepping the next nightmare thing that you're filming. So it's great not having the burden of producing and writing.
Is the Eric Andre Show, that's that 5 nights a week?
We shoot it in just a big, it takes 11 months or one season of the show. So it's six weeks of a writer's room, 6 weeks of prep, 6-7 weeks of shooting, and 6 months of editing.
Wow. So how do you keep the show fresh now after doing it for so long? And how do you get people to come on that still don't know what the show is?
People, we try our best not to tell people my name or the name of the show. Gotcha. But even when that fails, we try to tell people very little. And even if they do their own research, when African hissing cockroaches are flying at you and explosives are going off under your feet and scorpions are raining down and I have an electric cattle prod in my hand, you're going to have a reaction no matter what.
It's probably more along the lines too that people want to be on the show now that it's got such name value, you know?
Yeah. People will ask me to be on the show and I'll be like, it's your funeral, man. Be careful what you wish for.
I'm still thinking back when I was on and you had me walk through the stage. There's a hole in the stage. And then this crazy like matinee music comes on like, dent, 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 dent. It's like, it pauses. I mean, like you said, it really is all in the edit, right?
It's all in the edit. I wish we showed more. I got to think of that footage. You know, think about keeping it fresh. Like think about the Jackass guys. Like they all know they're going to prank each other, but they don't know how they're going to prank each other. So even 25 years later, you know, the last Jackass movie, when you walk into a porta potty and they detonate an explosive underneath it while you're taking a shit, you're going to have a reaction.
You mentioned, as we start to wind down here, you mentioned Howard Stern earlier and how he was influenced you on some of the stuff that you've done. You've done his show a few times and there was,
I don't have many pictures in my office, but this is like one of the, I don't have a single picture of myself in my house, but this is one of the only pictures I have hanging up in my office. That's like my Oscar. I have that and an autographed Slipknot.
So tell us about your experiences on doing Howard's show, because there's one in particular that I remember seeing that was pretty ridiculous.
He's the king. He's the goat. You know, he's the godfather. He took a medium. He took a dying medium, radio, where he could have been a television mogul or a movie mogul, and he went to radio and he used his massive brain and fought tooth and nail his entire life to unleash his form of punk rock subversive creativity into this really kind of traditional restricted medium.
Right.
And fought at nothing and stopped at nothing to bring this like anarchic, chaotic, I don't know. He's just a genius. He's a genius. I feel such a deep level of gratitude that he has me on so often. I just love the guy. He's like a father figure to me, comedically. Even before I met him, like his influence, his ability to stick to his guns and stop at nothing to fight for creative freedom and win ultimately and make so much money doing it. And have so much success and fame as a radio DJ, as the most successful radio DJ. I don't know. He's just unbelievably brilliant. And I see how when I'm there and I have the pleasure of being interviewed by him four times at this point, it's like, it's such a pleasure seeing like what a well-oiled machine it is over there. I don't know. He's really, he's the best.
So what prompted you to ride the Sibian?
Oh, the Sibian? I wanted to be the first male guest to ride the Sibian. So I took a Viagra. I was going to take X-Lax, and Jason Kaplan goes, Howard doesn't want you to shit all over the studio. I was like, that's fair. So I took an X-Lax. I took a Viagra, which I had never taken before, and it didn't really work. But and I rode the Sibian, and I wanted to, I got naked, and I wanted to achieve climax, but it just made me, I just felt like I had to take a shit. It made my blood hole itchy.
Well, the Sibian is a masturbation machine, and he has the girls ride it.
Yes, it would be better if I had a clitoris. If I had a clitoris, it would have been a more successful venture. But alas, I do not. I was not born with such machinery.
Last few things, man. What's like for we're talking about pranks and that sort of a thing. What's your favorite prank that you've ever pulled outside of the Eric Andre show?
We did a movie Bad Trip, and there's a scene where my character breaks into a gorilla enclosure at the zoo and tries to take a selfie with the gorilla, and this gorilla, who was a man, a hyper-realistic looking gorilla outfit, but the people were pranking did us, kind of like attacks me, holds me hostage, and then he starts butt-fucking me from behind in front of all the zoo goers. We did not, we were like 10% chance we would buy this, and they all bought it. And it's like one of the greatest pranks. I think it's what made the movie a hit.
Bad Trip is great because it's a movie, but it's all based around the pranks though.
Yeah. So like it's a narrative movie, but it's told through hidden camera pranks, all with real people. There's not one single reaction to the movie that's fake.
When you do those, man, like how can you keep, I mean, obviously you got it down to a science, but how can you keep a straight face for this? Is you just get into character, like you're turning into the guy?
Yeah. I mean, so much stress and pressure goes into pre-production and production, and so much money is being spent, and it's so high stakes, and you need the movie to work, that you don't want to blow it at the finish line, because you need the movie to be a success. And also, like, everybody is not writing against you, but like, I was still like, yeah, I had to prove myself and continue to prove myself to the world. So it's just too much pressure. It's too much pressure. Start cracking me up. I'm under stress while I'm shooting a prank. I'm not. It's fun and funny when you're watching it at home by the time it's edited. But while you're doing it, it's quite stressful.
Last question for you. Who's been your favorite guest on the Eric Andre show as far as like the reaction and the pranks that you played on them? There must be some that stand out for you.
I'm looking at them right now.
Stop. Chris Jericho. Oh, stop. Oh, stop.
Chris Jericho, lead singer of the Murder Junkies.
Was there somebody else that stood up for you for the reaction of a prank or something?
Oh, my. I mean, so many. Robin Givens is really great because she was so stressed. She had no idea what the show was. I think her son talked her into it. So shout out to her son. So many people. It's a hard thing. Wiz Khalifa, Seth Rogen, Jimmy Kimmel.
What did you do to Robin that she said she was stressed out?
I'm trying to think. I think there was a lot of explosives. I think, we had like a little live alligator on a skateboard that came out. And she didn't like that. I made a bunch of like bugs in a box that we were like trying to convince her to put her hand in the box. She was like, it's a lot of stuff she wasn't crazy about.
Well, dude, it's been great talking to you, man. And congrats on everything.
Good talking to you, brother.
And I'll have to come to your birthday party one of these years.
Absolutely. love you, dude. Thanks so much.
Thanks, man. Talk to you soon. Bye.
I appreciate it. All right. Talk to you soon.